Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. This is your show today. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Joe, a new slogan for the Titans on the text line that I'm a big fan of. Loosen up. Get tightened up out of there. Loosen up.
There you go.
I'm here for it.
Not bad.
Look,
loosen up.
These are the things we have to resort to in the aftermath of a Titans game.
So tighten up with a low T and loosen up with a big fat L. Week after week. Well, I like it.
I mean, I was listening. I really enjoyed Ian's update there. It was like the Titans were shut out for the first time this year, and they did not get to the red zone. It's like, so they are shut out, and they did not even approach scoring a touchdown in this game down there in Houston.
Wait a minute. Wait. I don't think that's true, is it?
I don't know that they
Sly missed a 33-yard field goal. Wouldn't that be from the red zone?
I don't know. I saw some tweets that they didn't make it to the red zone. I'll have to double check, but
if it was, I mean, I thought it was a 33-yarder. If it was from the
33. I thought it was 43.
I think it was 43. I don't think it was 33.
It was in the force.
Oh, yeah,
I remember missed because I got him on my fantasy team. I was like, oh, that's a 4-pointer he missed.
So I guess you don't have to re-record it then.
I'll double check.
Yeah, I don't think they got the red zone. It's a tough one.
That's the thing is like, God. I mean, even when they did a few good things, we got this great kicker this year. This is going to be way better, guys.
Yep.
This is going to be way better than the guy who never missed field goals. This dude can crush it. Great job, Titans.
Yeah, it's
just like, again, it's reverse King Midas going on here, big time.
Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Welcome in Zach and Mount Juliet to the program. Zach, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, guys. Appreciate taking my call. Last night, I was listening to Kaharski's post-game show on his Q&A, and one of the people brought up a very good question that I wanted to bring up on this show. They said, you know, I didn't notice one person come on the O-line or anyone come to Cam Ward's defense and get in Azeez Alshire's face, who's a known dirty player in the league, after that dirty hit. As dumb as the dirty hit wasn't called, I find it crazy that no one on our team showed any backbone to even get in his face. The coach didn't get in the official's face about this. It just seems like we have no culture here. And it kind of reminded me of the time a while back whenever, I think it was Richard Sherman, laid a dirty hit on Mariota. And you saw LeJuan immediately get in his face and come to the aid of his quarterback.
Yeah.
It just seems like from a culture standpoint and, you know, tying into PK's question after there about the tough and relentless thing, it's like we just don't have any of that. And it's just, I mean, this is just rock bottom and bad. And as a fan, it's just kind of sad to see it.
Yeah. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate the call. Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, first off, the Alshire hit, Joe. I mean, I'm watching it in real time. I'm like, of all the flags that are thrown in football now, like all the times you guys throw flags, and you don't throw a flag on that one when the quarterback, you know, almost gets decapitated out there. You don't throw a flag there, especially with that guy. Like, you know, the officials know who hit him. Like, they know the reputation of that guy. And he didn't get a flag thrown on that play. And then to Zach's point, I mean, just, well, I guess nothing happened there. Let's head back to the huddle.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of those plays where he sort of isolated away from everyone. So, like, did those guys see it? Would be a question. Like, were the linemen all, I think, in front of him, right? So he's kind of isolated to the side and to the sideline. I'm not trying to make excuses, but I'm just saying it was one of those where it's, like, not right in your face as a lineman, so maybe you didn't even realize it happened. Now, Jeff Simmons did because he was right there, and
the
he went to the
saw,
ref.
The sideline saw, for sure.
Yeah, the sideline. Yeah, so I would, like, yeah, I think that would have been a good time for someone on the sideline to be, like, give Alshire, like, a shove. And to your point, Robbie, incredible. Everything gets, I mean, tiny touches of the helmet get called. He two-hand just rocks him in the face, a guy who has a huge history of dirty hits, and it's complete, not to take this title away from Kaharski, but just total Mr. Magoo with the officiating crew on that. Like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, it was
That's
awful.
Insane.
It was awful. And, like, again, you brush by the quarterback in the pocket, and, you know, your pinky makes contact with the ear hole of his helmet. They're throwing flags in this league now, and you don't call a flag on that. I just thought it was atrocious that way. And, you know, we wondered heading into the game, Joe. You got, I called it the stoppable force and the movable object last week, the Texans' offensive line and how bad they had been to this point, and then the Titans' pass rush trying to take advantage of that. I mean, I think Jeff Simmons, like, almost legitimately set a sack record in terms of, like, the quickness. I think it was, like, 2-point-something seconds on that one sack he had that got Stroud to the ground. That was pretty incredible. But on the whole, Joe, an offensive line that has been struggling, you come up with 2 sacks. Simmons got one, Arden Key got one, and 5 quarterback hits on Stroud, which, I mean, 5 quarterback hits for the Titans is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Against that offensive line, I don't know that I'd call it pretty good. Yeah. But for them, and in general, in any game, sure, take anything you can get. I noticed Arden Key a couple plays. Like, good for him.
Well, and
I noticed that he's on the field.
A big moment in the game, too. You know, the Titans, there's some penalties in there, and it's 2nd and 33. And it's like, wow, look at the Titans' defense. They're about to get off the field again here. 2nd and 33. And then Nico Collins, 12. Torches,
who?
38 for
who?
A pickup of 37 to convert a 2nd and 33 in the National Football League. Like, sometimes you'll see those long down and distances get converted because there's like a pass interference or something, and it makes you want to pull your hair out as a fan. But he just got toasted on that play. 37 yards right over the top of Legarius Sneed.
Total embarrassment. I mean, legit. You know, Skyler says, Joe, do you think Sneed knows who Nico Collins is now? Total embarrassment. And by the way, hey, I mean, even Brian Callahan yesterday after the game was like, well, you're talking. So that's what happened. I mean, if we have that clip, the subtext of this clip, Ian, if we have the clip of Brian talking about Sneed, you talk about a coach who's sick of a player. I mean, I know they just moved out Brownlee, but, you know, Sneed, so just as they said on the broadcast, on that play, 2nd and 33, I mean, Sneed is playing it like he doesn't know the coverage that they're in.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot play it that way in the coverage they're in, and he just gives up the play. And later, you know, was it Ross Tucker?
Yes.
Yeah. Later, they had Sneed completely botched a handoff that they were supposed to have, which was and gave up the – and Tucker's like, I don't want to blame Sneed, but – and it was like, yes, man, you should, because it's absolutely him who blew that. Well, he is awful. He is so bad. And I'll raise my hand. I mean, even Callahan confirms that, you know, basically that he's talking. So I was wrong on that, and Sneed is just – he is terrible. He is not – if you think Brownlee's bad to have in this locker room, a guy with that little accountability.
Good culture fit.
I know he has talent. Yeah, it's just terrible.
Good culture fit. Let's hear what Brian Callahan had to say yesterday on Legarius Sneed, not backing up the trash talk.
Coming into this game, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, he said the best players have to play better. You got a guy like Sneed who calls out, well, he gets himself going with the who when asked about Nico Collins when you have that. Like, what can you do to get that back on track?
Yeah, I mean, those are when you talk, you got to back it up. Didn't do that today. That's the decision the guy makes, and then he's got to live with that too. You know, that's on them. If they want to talk, then you got to back it up. And didn't do a good enough job of that today. That happens, but I don't know that's a personal thing for some guys. So
that was Callahan on Legarius Sneed.
I mean, that to me is a coach who's like, yeah, you know, like that's as close as he will ever come to ripping one of his players.
Let's head back to our phone line, welcoming David in Portland to the program. David, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Morning, gentlemen. So I just wanted to talk about Amy and the Cam comment. How do you think she feels about her $40 million franchise quarterback going viral for calling her product buns for, you know, FCC purposes, buns?
You can say ass.
He called her product ass. I mean, how do you think that sits with her and Barkley and Kenneth and Susan Smith? Like, that's my question. How do you think that sits with them? And I'll hang up and listen.
I mean, I think they're well aware of it. that would be my answer. I think they are totally aware of how bad they are. Like, if you're asking if they're going to have a problem with Cam Ward, like, voicing it after the game, my answer would be, if you're worried about that, you're worried. You got about a billion things you need to be worried about before you're worried about that after the game, would be my answer.
Yeah, I mean, he was talking about the team and the team. You know, he's talking about the specifically the football team, right? I mean, it's a little different. Now, if he said top to bottom, this organization is ass. And by the way, Amy, please buy me some grass. Then we'd really go viral.
There we go. 615-737.
And by the way, when I said I'm talking about grass on the field, by the way,
I smoke weed. Let's clarify. Constantly.
I don't like the turf. Talking about the grass.
Oh boy.
He stepped in
it
again.
Put some grass in the field and roll it up for me.
615-737.
What everybody needs around here.
1025, our phone number. Coming up next, a move that if I'm a Titans player in that locker room, and I'm talking about one guy very specifically, it's the only thing on my mind right now. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 the game.
We've got games ahead of us.
I asked it, but why isn't this thing getting any better?
Because we're playing bad football. Simple. Not playing good football right now, and I'm tired of hearing the same thing coming in the locker room. I mean, and I'm tired of saying it. We gotta play better. I'm tired of saying it. It's like this is the NFL. They wanted more than us. They played like they wanted more than us, and we're not playing good football right now.
That's Jeff Simmons after the game yesterday. Titans lose 26-0 to the Houston Texans. We will get into Tennessee surviving at Mississippi State and Vanderbilt, Utah State coming up here in just a few minutes on the program. The Rob Rant coming up at 7:45, Corey Curtis at 8 o'clock, all those things ahead here on the program. Joe, if I'm Jeffrey Simmons, I'm demanding a trade sometime over the next couple of weeks. That's where this is just me. If I were him, I think he's been pretty good, pretty darn good to begin the year, like one of the very few bright spots on the Titans to this point. And look, we've talked a lot about Simmons over the last couple of years, the contract, the way that he's played, and I would say it's been underwhelming the last couple of years. It hasn't been bad, but it hasn't been to the level that you've expected from him since he signed the contract. We know the story this offseason. He lost the weight. I think he's looked very good to this point. He doesn't have a whole lot of help out there, but I think he's been very good. And look, clearly, and you can hear it in his voice in that clip, and frankly, like every press conference every week with Jeffrey Simmons after the game, just kind of sounds like Groundhog Day at this point where he's talking about the same stuff, and I think he feels the same way of you're just talking about how many different ways this team finds to lose games. It's got to be wearing on him. And look, I have no doubt that he loves being here and he has enjoyed his time as a Titan. But in the back of his mind right now, don't you think there's a little bit of it that's like, well, if we're this bad, maybe they'll ship me out of here and I can go somewhere where I've got a chance to win. If I was him, I'd be in the general manager's ear by the time the trade deadline comes around.
It's an interesting thought. And yeah, I 100% agree. He's got to be so sick of this. Look, say what you want about Jeff Simmons. And we've gone through some of the stuff he said, some of the stuff he's done. He does care. Losing bothers him a lot. I think he'd probably he'd go jump on, be like a train jumper, get like one of those sticks with a knapsack and go jump on trains to New England right now if he could and go play for Vrabel and Landry, who, by the way, they looked pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, they did. It sets up well here in a couple weeks.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of it in terms of Jeff demanding a trade, but maybe it's worth, or at least, you know, being like, hey, guys.
If you want to ship me out of here, be my guest. I'll help you.
Don't forget old 98 when you're on the phone with people. I mean, this is obviously the biggest value. I have my doubts still that he can fetch a first. I feel like it's difference making edges, different positions where you could get a first. I'd like to know how many in-season trading deadline moves have fetched a first in NFL history.
I don't know.
Probably not many. I have my if you could get a first for him, then I think you absolutely have to do it if you're the Titans. And yeah, I'm sure he would love to go somewhere where he has a chance to win and not be in this vortex of poop.
Yeah, I mean, I just at some point all the losing just wears on you. And we know the record of Callahan, 3-18 now in 21 games as head coach. It's just absolutely brutal. And again, I think Simmons is like Simmons to me to this point in the season, Joe, has been what you probably hoped he would be, right? Like the clearly dropping the weight that he dropped has worked out very well for him. I think it's done exactly what he wanted to do. He looks quick. He looks explosive out there. Problem is, there's nobody out there with him that looks the same. Like, he's on an island on this Titans defense right now.
Right. So you take him out for a pick, and now we can start talking about some of the worst teams of all time in NFL. You know, you move a Simmons, you move a Snead. As someone on the Texan was asking, what's his trade? I mean, Snead right now is, I don't think you're getting a lot, but that's another one of the possibilities along with Ridley. Then you can really you got a chance to be like as bad or right up there with among the worst ever. Craig says on the text line driven by WilsonConnie.com, another show apparently yesterday said they couldn't trade Simmons because he's a borderline Hall of Famer. First of all, I don't understand the lot. First of all, I'm dubious of the Hall of Famer. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a borderline Hall of Famer. I think he'd need a few more years of high level play to get into that discussion. But second of all, even if he was, why can't you trade him? Is it the idea that he's like, because then he's like one of the franchise's great players or something like that? I mean, that's not an asinine. Brian Summers, if that was you, that's asinine. Let me know.
that cannot happen. Trevor says that's
a terrible take.
Trevor says Jerry Jones likes making questionable decisions. Maybe he'll get desperate enough to send a first the Titans way for Jeffrey Simmons. I don't know. And Jerry Jones' offense, apparently greatest offense ever conceived.
Well, their defense could use a little help. Defense could use a little bit of help. So.
I don't know. From just a quick little research, last year was the first year in a long time that all teams kept their first round picks. So it sounds like they are traded more often than we think.
In season?
I don't know.
That's the whole thing, right? Like, obviously,
NFL's
a lot of
32
trades.
Teams just combined to do something at the trade deadline that hasn't been done in 23 years, and that was keep all their first-round picks. So, not totally sure, but...
Yeah.
I will...
There's some digging, Dale.
Yeah, that. So I'm hearing that, and I'm hearing 22 straight years where at least a first was... There's no way that's true.
Maybe not at the deadline, but just
yeah, just that's what I'm talking about.
Some point to the deadline,
yeah, in the off season and all that for sure. It seems to me. I mean, it's only been like the last few years that there's even been any trades at all at the deadline. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, I mean, the deadline has definitely picked up the last few years. It used to be just a nothing burger out there.
Yeah. So interesting, but yes, I will do some research.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll join us at 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on another Titans debacle yesterday in Houston. Coming up next, the Vols survive a scare in Mississippi, and Vanderbilt with a ridiculous letdown for me late in the game against Utah State. We'll get into all that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. DVD with Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circa Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall today. Prior to the Monday night football games, head up there, watch the Jets and the Dolphins and the Bengals-Broncos games. Plus, ask for about Circa's giveaway of a trip to Las Vegas for the Titans-Raiders game coming up in October. We'll have the Rob Rant here in just a few minutes. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock. Joe, the Tennessee Volunteers get the win over the weekend, but it was by the little bitty hairs on their head that they got that win in Mississippi State. They win in overtime. So, Joe, the positive is you avoid the road stinker, disaster, whatever adjective you want to use there that we have seen from Tennessee football over the past couple of years. I thought Joey Aguilar came up with some really clutch plays late in the game to tie the game. And then the first play overtime, he handed off to Deshaun Bishop, and he scampers 25 yards into the end zone for the touchdown. Defense makes a stand near the goal line, and you walk out of there with a win. So obviously, Joe, getting the win is the most important thing, and Tennessee was able to do that. I did think there were several things in this game that were not good and that they've got to work on as they move forward here. So, like, for those who thought after the Georgia game that, well, Tennessee looked pretty good against Georgia, and they're just going to mosey their way through the rest of the schedule here with the exception of maybe Alabama, I think we saw on Saturday that they're not an imperfect – they're not a perfect football team and that they've got some problems at times. And I think you're seeing more and more as we get into SEC play. They need Jermaine McCoy and Ricky Gibson back on the field. That's one of the problems that they've got. Overall, though, they do win the game, 41-34 in overtime. Your thoughts on what you saw from Tennessee and Mississippi State on Saturday?
I think that's a great eye of the beholder kind of game. I mean, I've saw some people who were like, they overcame all this stuff and got the win. That is just huge, you know? And I'm like, well, yeah, but what they overcame was a lot of their own ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
So you better clean that up. You're not going to be better teams. First of all, to your point on Georgia, we also keep getting more information. I mean, who the heck had Alabama winning at Georgia after what we saw week one, right? I mean, so what does that mean? Does that mean Alabama all of a sudden is just a wagon that we thought they might be? Or is Georgia kind of a mid team this year? I don't know. I mean, I've watched enough Georgia now to be a little bit dubious of them. But for Tennessee, you know, you make so many mistakes. I mean, like Braylon Staley early in the game, it's like you muff the punt, you don't field another one, so it gets down at the one. You drop a pass that's right there for you, like, you know, just him. And then on and on through the game, it was a beautiful mess of a college football game. Look, I mean, the way that they kept fighting back and making plays is good. And their defense, for all of its issues at times, against a good team, a good offense. Like, Mississippi State's not bad, man. Mississippi State's pretty good. Like, they're not done winning. They are going to get some people this year, you know? For the defense to make the plays they did to score twice.
Yeah.
Especially this, you know, the strip sack when they had some tremendous pass rush at times. There's some encouraging signs. You know, I think overall you take it, but there's a lot to get better at. And once again, Robbie, I mean, I'm sorry, but Josh Heupel and the clock.
It's horrific.
They are enemies, and it's really not good, like, because it's just happened too many times.
He's horrible at clock management. And I said this Saturday night, for the most part, I really like Josh Heupel. I think he's done a really good job at Tennessee. So by no means am I suggesting that, you know, he needs to be in danger or anything, or like his job or anything. But he's horrible at clock management, and he has been the whole time since he's been there. Like, I'm not saying every single situation he's mishandled the clock when they've needed to, but how many times have I yelled on this show about something before the half or at the end of the game where they just totally botched it with the clock management? It was brutal on Saturday night, and they're lucky to have overcome it.
Yeah, like I actually texted Ubbin. Ubbin and I got in this big, big argument back in, I think it was Heupel's first year. Was that the game at Florida where I think at the end of the half, or it was mind numbing how bad the clock management. And Ubbin's like, no, that's how you do it with that offense. I'm like, man, I get that. Like, you are built for those moments. So if you can go boom, fast, go, great. But sometimes it's like, yeah, you can't lose those 30 seconds. Yeah. Just take the time out. Then line up and run a play.
Yeah,
it's asinine. So the other night I texted up. I'm like, you better acknowledge this now, man. And he was like, yeah, that was bad. I mean, it was just – so there's that going on. I agree with Texter Remington, who says, everybody talking about the bad, but what about how clutch Joey football was in the game-tying drive? I agree. Look, he's good. He was good, man, and ultimately, the trajectory of this team, I still have confidence and optimism. Most starting with him, and again, Staley had a rough one. The OPI was a bad call.
Horrific.
On Matthews. You know, it's like we see the slow mo up close, and it's really bad. I mean, when I watch it in real time, I was like, oh, maybe he did show him. Then you watch slow mo, you're like, oh my god, that's atrocious. I mean, like, refs are going to make mistakes sometimes because they don't get the slow-mo from this angle, right? But still, it was a bad call. But Brazel is, I mean, he's a monster. And ultimately, I still, you know, Sanders is playing now. You get those corners back. I think there's more cause for optimism, certainly, right now than pessimism.
No, I would agree. I mean, and you're 4-1, and your offense, you know, and I know Saturday wasn't specifically offense when you're talking about two touchdowns from the defense, but you're finding a way to get into the 30s and the 40s and sometimes beyond that every game. So you're feeling good about the, you know, the point totals that you're putting up. You know, you look at the rest of the schedule, we'll see what happens now with Arkansas, that they fired their coach, and if they get some sort of bump from that in a couple of weeks. But after that, it's at Alabama. My guess is John Mateer probably back quarterback for Oklahoma by the time you play them later in the year. So there's still a couple of really big tests that Tennessee's going to have later in the year out there.
Bobby Petrino, he's coming for you, Vols. Vroom, vroom. Got that motorbike warmed up for you. So I mean, just be ready.
First picture I saw yesterday after they fired Sam Pittman was the picture of Petrino in the neck brace. And I was like, here we go. He's back.
Like if they quickly, I mean, this could almost be worth a rant in some way. Like if they seriously consider making him the full-time head coach, they are the joke. I know we have some Arkansas fans on here. I hope you understand that you will be the absolute joke of college football and should be if you really consider giving him the job. But Caleb asks, why was Staley returning punts? He hadn't done that all year. I think after the first one, because obviously Boo Carter has been in that role. I don't remember. What did Heupel say about that after the game?
He didn't name anything. He was asked about it. I mean, he didn't say anything specifically about it. But I mean, Boo Carter, the 2 weeks before that, fumbled two punts. That's why.
Right.
That's why he's back there. It's because Boo Carter couldn't hold on the ball.
They're searching.
Yeah. Now, I think, you know, what you have to weigh if you're Heupel is Boo Carter, when he does catch the ball, is probably one of the most electric punt returners in college football. So how do you weigh? I understand, like, the first thing you got to do is catch the ball. And if you can't do that, then you're not serving much purpose back there as a punt returner. But after the first one from Staley, I would have probably been like, yeah, why don't you just go ahead and put Boo Carter back out there?
Yeah, exactly. Or somebody. A safe person who will catch the ball or understand that, like, you can't let the ball bounce at, like, the 15 and keep rolling when you easily could have picked it up on one hop. Like, it's just bad. It's a guy who just shouldn't be returning punts. That's what I saw in the first quarter.
Vanderbilt takes down Utah State, a ridiculous backdoor cover from Utah State on the spread.
Woo,
that
baby.
Hands me another L and picks.
Gives me a lock.
Really good stuff there. But Vanderbilt gets it done. They take care of the business. 55-35, the final on Saturday over at Vanderbilt, which means Vanderbilt is 5-0 heading into Alabama next week. So what a matchup that is going to be, and we'll have plenty of time later this week to talk about that. But Joe, you got game day coming next week to Alabama for Vanderbilt. It's going to be a big environment there. Vanderbilt offensively looks good again in this game. What did you make of Vanderbilt and their takedown of Utah State, setting up a highly anticipated game next week against Alabama?
Well, I guess it's we can also eye a beholder this one. I watched that defense, and then I watched Alabama, and I thought to myself, whew, this does not look like a good matchup for the Vanderbilt defense on Saturday. Their defense has flaws. So that's worth keeping in mind. I also got a text during the game from our friend Stilly, who asked me, is Vanderbilt have the best offense in college football, which I hadn't thought about in those terms. And that's lofty, but I must say, their offense is legit. The speed everywhere, clean pockets. And again, have they played great teams? No, but they've played some. I mean, there's pros on that South Carolina team that they played and kept Pavia clean. So overall, it's very exciting for Vanderbilt. You know, again, you got a great home environment. You just blow out a team. Yes, defensive issues, but Robbie, I mean, one thing that I know has never happened, and I don't have to look it up. You know, Vanderbilt's had game day before because, like in the Franklin era, I think they had one, right? I promise you 100%. Vanderbilt has never been the visiting team on a game day.
That's probably true.
Because that doesn't – you don't do that. Like, you don't go to some, you know, great team's games for them to blow out some team like a homecoming game. Like, everybody has used to Vanderbilt going to Alabama. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt being the road team on a game day, like, to me, is like, dang, man.
I'm with you. That has to be the first time. Has to be.
100%.
Yeah.
There's no, 100%. So it's pretty cool, and I'm excited about the game this week. But like, they are going to have to, they're going to have to score a ton of points. We're going to see if is that offense, if it's that good, can they go into Bama, which wants revenge, which has all this momentum. We said last week, I don't think this is the best scenario for Vanderbilt. I think they'd rather have a down bad Alabama all screaming about Kalen DeBoer than, oh crap, we are good. You know,
yeah.
I don't think it's a great, you know, because they're not going to overlook Vanderbilt anyway because of last year. But I think their offense can do some stuff Saturday. It's going to have to do a lot.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up next. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock. We'll get back into the Titans with him. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Drop trowel. I'm going to stick this in your ass.
We need this team to win.
Ass is absolutely, it is all out ass today.
Oh my God. My ass is burning.
Did I talk to Michael?
Micah. Top to bottom, this organization is ass. And by the way, Amy, please buy me some grass.
Losing's really not in my vocabulary.
Do you know your elbow from your ass?
We ass. Am I a clown to you, Mike?
All right, thank y'all. God bless.
It is that time of the day. The Rob Rant here on the program, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Joe, it's a common word on this program from you.
I just hope like the FCC doesn't have some obscure rule. It's like 36 asses equals one F-bomb, and we're all fired.
I hope not, too. I have a multi-pronged approach to the rant today. So let me start on this, Joe, because I feel like this has basically turned into an annual tradition here on the show. So I might as well just go ahead and get it out of the way here on September the 29th. I am so just absolutely beside myself with targeting in college football. It is the absolute worst. It is the absolute worst. And the fact that it's 2025 and we're still operating under a system with targeting that just tosses people out of the game left and right is amazing to me. And we haven't had anybody in college football yet that's had enough common sense to say, hey, why don't we tier this thing? Just like the NBA that we've talked about a billion times here on this show. Flagrant one, you get a 15-yard penalty, but guess what? You don't get kicked out of the game 2 minutes into the second half if you're an Alabama player and have to miss the entire first half of the game next week. Like, it's just so dumb that we're still operating under this system. Get a flagrant one targeting in there and a flagrant two. And if the flagrant two, if you look at it and you say, yeah, that guy was out there headhunting and was trying to take the dude's head off and lowered the crown of his helmet into the skull of his opponent on purpose, trying to hurt him, then kick him out of the game and make sure the punishment lasts until halfway through next week if it's in the second half as well. But the fact that in college football, with everything going on right now and NIL and all these things and all the changes that are being made on a day-by-day and year-by-year basis in the sport, that they have still not gotten smart enough to change the targeting rule where there's a flagrant one, flagrant two system or some sort of tier to it is absolutely incredible to me. And there are calls every week where you look at it and you've got a rules analyst, commentators, and everybody debating back and forth over whether a play is even targeting or not, and nobody can figure it out, and yet they're calling it and kicking people out of the game. It's the stupidest thing going on in sports right now, the targeting rule in college football.
No, I think you've been on this for a while, and I really like the tiered idea. There's a lot of incidental targeting, which is, okay, letter of the law, but again, so many of those are like, you twist your body one way and you're not expecting the runner to do something else. And all of a sudden, oh, well, technically that's targeting. That should not be an ejection. And then meanwhile, I'm sure you saw it. Like I'm watching Penn State, Oregon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that not the most blatant targeting? And everybody's like, no, no, him, he's not defenseless. And it's not exactly in that radius of the helmet. I'm like, he just smashed his head against the dude.
I know.
Okay.
Like, we're eventually going to have to get a protractor out there and start keeping up with what's the radius? What's the exact strike point? Like, it's just so dumb.
Yeah. They've made it way too ridiculous. You know, it's like the catch in the NFL is another infuriating thing that's been going on for a long time. But like, this is, to your point, like, this really alters games to take a kid out of a game for some of these things that are so that again are just technicalities, basically.
Oh, again,
so,
and some of them are
keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah, like some of them are bad fouls. Yeah. And you look at it and you're like, yep, well, that's about as targeting as it gets, and that's a dangerous play. And maybe even there's a little bit of intent there, too. Kick him out. Like, I have no problem with that. Kick him out. But we've got to have a little bit of common sense in this stuff here. It is entirely too punitive to have that play. Like the Alabama play the other night. 23, and I forget his name for the life of me, comes flying in to the play. There's a pile up at the line of scrimmage, comes flying in. And his head makes contact to a running back who, by the way, is lowering his head and the shoulder at the same time. It just happens to collide at the side. And it was like, what? I don't know, 3 minutes into the second half? So that kid misses the entirety of that half and the entirety of the first half next week. It's just so – it's ridiculous. And like, there's no difference between that and somebody gets a targeting with a minute left in the fourth quarter and it's like the same – it's just dumb. It's all stupid. And they got to get that part of it figured out. My other part of this, now that I've gotten successfully refired up about targeting.
There we go.
What a disaster of a performance by the U.S. team at the Ryder Cup. I won't spend a whole lot of time on this because it's golf, and I ain't talking about golf a whole lot on Monday. I love golf. I know most of you don't care, so it's fine. But, you know, they had the comeback that was almost amazing yesterday, but it was just preceded by such an absolute dud of a Friday and Saturday by Team USA. You got people in the crowd yelling all sorts of things at Rory McIlroy and apparently Rory McIlroy's wife and kid and all these things. Like, it was just, you know, people are throwing beer. People are fist fighting each other in the stands. Like, it was kind of a disaster of a weekend.
God.
Now, you know, congratulations to Team Europe. They played great. Team Golf. Yesterday was fun because the Americans did mount a charge, and it was fun to see, you know, JT and Bryson and Scotty Scheffler and all these guys come out and play really well yesterday. It was just too little, too late, but really poor showing on Friday and Saturday by Team USA. It was looking like it was going to be one of just the worst showings in the history of, like, team sports for the United States for the first 2 days. And they at least battled back and made it less embarrassing. But some of the behavior this week, like Rory McIlroy, you could tell, like, it really bothered him. And he was getting after people in the crowd. And Shane Lowry was getting after people in the crowd. And I realized, like, when you're playing in an environment like that, there's some level of heckling that you're going to have to deal with. But, like, when you're talking about somebody's wife and kids, particularly when they're there in the crowd watching, that's not good. Got to be a little bit better than that.
I mean, that's pathetic. Is this like Coach O's influence? Is Coach O the one?
I don't know. You know, Coach O did not rein it in. I don't know where he was throughout
all
this.
Coach O, he was like, hey, act just like LSU fans act during a night game. Get that drunk and then do that stuff. And I'll bring a tiger I can unleash on the Europeans.
Yeah, exactly. Just good stuff there from Coach O. I mean, I wonder if Coach O stayed around the whole weekend. I know he was there for the practice round, but he may have left after he saw how bad it was going on Friday
and
Saturday.
Maybe he could have deterred some of that behavior, I guess.
He could have. I mean, there's all sorts of ways I could go. I mean, I could rant about SEC officiating too, because frankly, like, I was watching the Vanderbilt game. I thought the Vanderbilt game was horrifically officiated. I mean,
punt.
It's just awful. Like, I don't even know I've never seen anything like that. You got the offensive pass interference with Chris Brazel, which I'm with you. I mean, I guess if it's bang bang there, you're trying to make a judgment call in the moment. But, like, to me, if you're throwing an offensive pass interference penalty on a touchdown pass, you better be pretty freaking sure that it's offensive pass interference. It's brutal.
Yeah. I mean, the DB fell down like he got shot or something, you know. That's the thing. So the ref's running in front of him, but you still shouldn't make an assumption, which is what he did, you know. And then, of course, we see that side view, and it's like, oh, my God, that is atrocious. And that, you know, that's one of those plays that if that call is for all the Vols issues, if that call isn't made, then that game might not be all that interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a huge one call can change a game completely. And speaking of bad officials, let's give the ACC guys credit because, you know, and I've seen some Wake fans say this, and I agree. Like, if this was a different program, there might be more screaming about it. They got screwed on an obvious offsides call on Georgia Tech,
yes.
Which if they throw the flag, they run the clock out and they finish that game and they end up losing in overtime. That's just like, how can you as an official miss that call? It wasn't like. He was, if anybody watched the replay, you know, sometimes guys move and it's like, did they cross the line? I don't know. He was way past the line. This is utterly unacceptable.
Now, college football officiating is just awful. And there's too much money involved in all of it for it to be this bad. That's the bottom line. There's too much money involved in the whole thing for the officiating to be this bad.
It's one of the biggest reasons that college football does need to be consolidated with, you know, a commissioner or whatever you want to call it and have uniformity. Because these leagues do whatever they want to do and they pay what they pay and all this stuff, and it's just garbage. They need to pool their resources and pay these officials really, really good salaries and deter all the gamblers who I guarantee you are contacting a whole bunch of officials who officiate college football. It's insane.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Corey Curtis will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans' loss to the Texans. Was that the game that gets Brian Callahan fired? More on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.